All right, good afternoon, everybody. It is Tuesday afternoon, January 25th. We are now close to 11:20 a.m. We're starting a little bit late. I had a kerfluffle with getting the right Zoom link sent out. So somehow when I copied the Zoom link, it managed to copy my personal link, which is what comes up by default. When you open up Zoom, it comes up with that and you have to click into the right meeting and then get the invitation, which is what I had thought that I had done. But I admittedly, between last night and this morning, have been multitasking on many, many different fronts, trying to get web pages updated, trying to get Syllabi updated, trying to get the Canvas shell updated. So, and I'm midway through the Canvas shell, so that's good. So that's getting ready to be published here pretty quick as well. For many of you, I've already had an introduction to many of you from lab yesterday. So we spent a good amount of time talking about the curriculum and talking about lab. And I thought I was fairly clear about when this lecture was starting on Tuesday, Thursday, offset from the Monday, Wednesday class. But it may be that other people also have conflicts that I had not really considered that this is going to be a completely asynchronous online class. And if there are a lot of conflicts, then that may be something that we want to look at and that I may want to adjust because the goal really is to have you guys present during the lecture. Not that it's mandatory, not that there are going to be things that take place that can only happen within Zoom. My teaching philosophy is that when I'm here and present and lecturing, that I don't phone it in. I don't do pre-recorded lectures. So a lot of instructors throughout the college have been making their perfect lectures and they put it all up in Canvas and they do it in such a way that they just turn that Canvas shell on and then they grade homework. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's one way of going about and doing it. It's just, to me, I value your questions and I value the interaction throughout the lecture. And so I could go and I could do the perfect lecture and it's the perfect lecture for me, but it may not be the perfect lecture for you. So when I show up and I'm here live, I'm bringing 50% of what needs to happen. The other 50% is brought by you and the questions that you bring and the direction that you're able to take the lecture. And I think that those two add up more to a sum more than 100%, because once you start asking questions, it forces me to be a better teacher. It forces me to find new ways to explain the material that fit you. And I think that's incredibly important in terms of being able to learn and for me to be able to teach the information. That's what makes the whole thing work, is that dynamic relationship of somebody who's there to be able to ask questions of them and get the answers and learn it in a way that best suits you. So that's part of my teaching philosophy. As I said, there's a good number of people who are in this lecture who are not in lab for one reason or another. Maybe they completed lab at another institution. Maybe they completed lab here at Cabrillo already and they still need to pass the lecture section. So there's a number of reasons that people may be in the lecture only. Some people may only need the lecture for whatever coursework it is that they need to go through. So my name is Jason Cameron, and I've been teaching here at Cabrillo for 20 some odd years. I started in 2001, so I guess that puts me at 21 years? Seems like longer than that. Seems like a lot longer than that. Before that, I was also a student here at Cabrillo, and so it seems like it's been a whole lot longer than that. I like to be addressed as Jason. I answer to Dr. Cameron. I answer to Mr. Camera. I answer to just about anything. Hey, you, I need help. That works too. So however you want to address me, but Jason works just fine. So I'm a little flummoxed at where I want to go this morning now. Let's start off, I think, by looking at the syllabus and looking at the resources and talking a little bit about the class. This is going to be a fully online section. This section, when the college goes back to face-to-face instruction on February 22nd, this class will remain online. This is set to be a fully asynchronous online course. And in the lecture, that's a little bit easier to do. There's no necessity really that we need to meet in person. And the flexibility that is offered by an online course like this gives you a lot more flexibility in time for assignments and quizzes and exams. In the normal course, I would give you 15, 20 minute exam quizzes, maybe 10 minute quizzes, sometimes depending on how long the quiz is and how long people are taking to complete it. There are in-class activities that happen. In the normal course of things, when we're in face-to-face mode, we would have a lecture time and an exam that we would sit down and do that would take an hour and a half to do the exam. In the online mode, I open that up and I do it differently. So in the online mode, usually what I do is I take the quizzes and publish them on a Friday and have them due like on a Monday or on the following Tuesday. So you get over the weekend in a couple of weekdays to be able to complete it. And I do the same thing with the exams. They're wide open, usually giving you 4 or 5 days to be able to complete the exam. So there aren't the time constraints and the time pressures that you would feel within the normal course of things. Also, I've opened it up more so that I'm encouraging you guys to work together. For the last couple of years and the last couple of semesters, I have explored encouraging students to be able to work together with some caveats in the way that it works a little bit. But I want you to collaborate. I want you to work together and find times to be able to get together either virtually over Zoom or together at a study location, maybe a coffee shop or something, and to be able to work on some of these exercises together. The idea or goal there is that collaboration and that working together on things doesn't mean that you're just copying from somebody. The dynamic that I like to explain is that if you are the person who is explaining things, that you don't just give the person who's coming to you or working with you the answer, but rather really make sure that they understand it and help to explain it to them. And if you are a person who is looking for information, looking for help on a problem, and you have a student who's explaining it to you, don't let them get away with just giving you the answer. Really get them to explain it to you, make them explain it to you, and walk away with an explanation, not an answer. So I like to think of these as opportunities, additional opportunities to learn the information. And so I encourage collaboration. And at the same time, when you're working together, you also have to feel free to dissent, because sometimes somebody is convinced they have the right answer and two people can be convinced that they both have the right answer, and they might both have the right answer, even though they're answering it differently, because I haven't explained the way that I really do grading. Sophia, if Pronto is an option, I found that's very helpful with working together on things. I have not explored Pronto, so I don't know much about Pronto, to be honest. I have not tried it out or explored it. Mainly the collaborations that I've seen have been people that are getting together and they're using Zoom to get together over Zoom and to collaborate things. Sometimes they're using either my office hour link or the link for the lecture in order to get together, because that link is always live and I don't have to be here for that link to be activated. So you guys can all log into the lecture and work together if you so desired. Pronto may be an option. Another option that people have used a lot is Discord. And Discord is becoming fairly heavily used. Oftentimes it's a shadow resource within a class. Students will activate a Discord and they'll use it for collaboration behind the scenes so that the instructor really doesn't know how much collaboration is taking place. My take on that is that's great. Go ahead, throw a Discord page together. However, if you're going to throw a Discord page together, I would appreciate being invited to it, not because I want to watch what you guys are doing, but because it allows you more access to me, because I treat it as if it's sort of like instantaneous, virtual, always on office hours. So when I see questions come across the Discord, if I have the bandwidth and I have the time, I answer them. And if I see something that somebody else is answering, I oftentimes chime in and I'm like, hey, fantastic answer, way to go. Or sometimes I may gently try to correct it a little bit. Here's another way to look at it. Here's another way to think about it. And I find that, you know, I've got Discord activated on my phone so that it pops up and gives me notifications, and I'm seeing those notifications whenever it is and trying to answer it whenever it is. Most of the time they're coming in a little bit later at night, but that's fine. That's, you know, I have the option to either answer it at my discretion or not, depending upon what I'm doing. So that's another tool that I think can be used well here. Let's see, what else? Let me go ahead and pull up the syllabus, and maybe the syllabus will jog some other ideas for us in what we need to do before I just jump into lecture. Oh, by the way, I did happen to get the webpage, or the webpage is almost entirely updated. The only thing is the lab schedule that I think I need to complete, but everything else I think is just about done. Okay, let me find syllabus 12A and share that. And let's zoom this out. That'll work. Okay, everybody's seeing the 12A course syllabus there. Okay, David, that's fine. Yeah, there's no attendance. You got to go take attendance at the other lecture. That's fine. I'm sorry. Like I said, if I need to find a new time, I may find a new time that is more appropriate for everybody, so that everybody can be here, and if they desire to be. I'll try to work that out. Maybe I'll do a poll about, see what works with people's schedules. This was just a traditional time that this class normally takes place. And this time frame is usually blocked out both Monday, Wednesday, and Tuesday, Thursday. And so that's where it normally sits. That's why I put it here. That's why I went for this time slot. Okay. Office hours are on here Monday, Wednesday, and Tuesday, Thursday. Monday, Wednesday, 12:30 to 1:30. And Tuesday, Thursday, 1 to 2. These are all virtual office hours on Zoom. I've sent those links out via email. I'll continue to send them out via email until I get the Canvas shell up and running that has all those links within it. So those are the office hours. My office phone is there. The email, jason.camera@cabrillo.edu, and the course webpage at chemed.study. And I'll come back to this in a minute. We'll go take a look at the webpage and see everything that's there. The lectures are set up to be Tuesday, Thursday, 11:10 to 12:30 to offset them from the Monday, Wednesday lab. And because the lab time and the lecture time for this class are traditionally right back to back to each other, I thought it would be better to stagger them day by day so that when we go back to face-to-face instruction, people aren't struggling to try to find a computer. That was the idea there. The course materials, the textbook, Klein. This is a fantastic resource. It is one of my favorite textbooks that I've ever worked with. I've worked with a number of them. And Klein wrote the textbook that I would have written if I were going to write a textbook. There's many times that I had considered in the past thinking about what textbook I would write, how I would write that, and Klein beat me to it. One of the things that I love about the Klein textbook is it is research-based, that many of the problems that are in the back of the book are not just random problems that somebody made up. They are things that are taken from research, and that's one of the fantastic things about it. Clarissa, go ahead.
Oh, hi, good morning. I wanted to ask about, for this textbook specifically, is it accessible like through PDF? I think you mentioned one time through the lab, but I'm not sure if that was, I wanted to make sure if there's like a PDF for this textbook specifically, or if we should have like a hardcover for this textbook. I wanted to ask about that.
Yeah, how you work with the textbook is up to you. It is available as a PDF, so you can get it online, you can get it. There's a loose leaf version. There's a number of different ways to access the textbook. I think that oftentimes people these days are looking for PDFs of the textbook that they can just find online. Sometimes you can find those. I do happen to have a PDF of the textbook. However, it is not posted online, because if I post it online, I could get in trouble for posting stolen material. So it is available as a PDF from, it's John Wiley & Sons, and you go to their website and search on the textbook, you can find different options where you can get it as a PDF. It is available. Does it make sense to have the PDF version? As long as you're okay reading online as opposed to reading an actual textbook, then yeah, it does make sense. The online version or the digital version of the textbook is as accessible as the print version, although some of us like to work in print more than we like to work in digital. So it really depends upon how you like to work with material. So yes, I think that you can find a PDF of the Klein book. The Klein Solution Manual. This is not a mandatory book, but a highly recommended book. A lot of people, because I don't assign homework, what I do is I say that all the problems in the back of the book are good problems. And therefore, how do you know whether you're getting a problem right or wrong? Well, in the back of the textbook itself, they have the answers to the odd numbered problems, just like most textbooks do. However, those answers are just a straight up answer. It is not an explanation. And the answer key, that study guide and solutions manual, gives a full worked out solution for each one of the problems. And that can be extremely helpful when trying to figure out what you're doing right or what you're doing wrong in understanding where they go with a problem. So that comes highly recommended. This book, The Klein Organic Chemistry as a Second Language, that is also a highly recommended book. And in fact, when working problems and trying to learn this material for the first time, I find it that this book, Organic Chemistry as a Second Language, breaks it down into problem sets which start very simple and then move into sometimes slightly more advanced problems. I would say more intermediate problems. The problems in the textbook don't start off as easy as the problems in Organic Chemistry as a Second Language. They start off sort of in the intermediate stage and then go into more difficult problems. And so I like starting when I'm practicing, or even when I'm telling SI leaders what practice problems should I be looking at to go and work with the class, I take them out of this Klein book for a first pass, because this book gives just a lot. There's a lot of really simple, fast, rapid fire problems to work on, which is really kind of nice. And then the second place that I go for problems is I go to the actual textbook itself and start hitting problems there. So that's sort of the progression that I do or recommend when looking at things. And this book, the Klein book here, while not inexpensive, is not at the same price level as a textbook. So that textbook can be very expensive. I understand that. And I look at it in two ways. Number one, I look at the value of the book. We rely on it, we use it. And so you get a lot of use out of it. It's approachable, it's readable, and it's for two semesters. So I take all of that into consideration when selecting something as expensive as this Klein textbook. The OChem as a Second Language, I think, is closer to a $40 investment, but it cannot be a standalone. You need the textbook in order to be able to read and access the rest of the information as well. The chapters that are in there, while my lectures are good, and my lectures are to supplement and to help that understanding from the textbook, that reading of those chapters and breaking down each of the individual skills is really important as well. So the textbook is important. All right, student learner outcomes are always good to take a look at, to understand what it is you're going to get out of the class, what you're going to be able to do when you come away from the class. analyze and communicate the structure of organic molecules, including stereochemistry thereof, utilizing spectroscopic tools, standard organic nomenclature, condensed structural formulas, Lewis structures, and bond line formulas, with emphasis on alkanes, alkenes, alkynes, aromatic hydrocarbons, and alkyl halides. This is the material of first semester. And all of these things are ways in which organic chemists communicate. We communicate almost entirely through writing, almost entirely through drawing. When two organic chemists sit together and talk about organic chemistry, we do, we explain it, but most often what you'll see is a piece of paper between the two of them and a pen or a whiteboard, and we communicate in drawing as much as we communicate verbally. So the drawing and the communication is far, far more than what you did in Chem 1A and Chem 1B. It is that the structures can be more efficiently communicated through drawing than they can be in any other modality. So that communication, we have many different ways of communicating, many different layers of communicating components of organic chemistry. Second part, predict and explain organic chemical reactivity utilizing a variety of models, including valence bonding theory, molecular orbital theory, resonance theory, reaction mechanisms, and conformational analysis. So there's a lot of different theories that are in there, and we'll discuss all of these different theories. And theories are models that give you some prediction over the real world, generally simplified models. And some of them are more successful than others. In other words, they all are able to predict things, but some of them break down at certain areas. And so we have various models to accommodate different ideas. And when one breaks down, we move to the next. And so lots of different theories there, valence bonding theory, molecular orbital theory. We'll talk about natural bonding theory. There's all kinds of resonance theory, all of these ideas. Okay, and utilize a series of organic reactions to design a viable synthetic route to a given simple target molecule requiring a maximum of 4 steps. This is synthesis. And this is one of our ultimate goals, is that when we learn about organic chemistry, we learn not only about the organic molecules and the properties that those molecules have, but we learn about the chemical reactions. And it's not about a single reaction, but a purpose of being able to take a starting material and to be able to convert it into a target molecule, something that we desire, something that has value, be it a commercial value, a medical value, whatever it is, being able to actually control organic synthesis and make molecules is one of the main goals of what we try to do within organic chemistry. And so that's one of our student learner outcomes. And we start fairly simple. It has a maximum of 4 steps. That means 4 reactions in sequence. As we go to second semester, we go up to 12 and make higher. And to make some of the molecules that, some of the drugs that we utilize today, some of those have 20 or 30 steps, 20 or 30 reactions to be able to put those things together, which somebody sat down and designed a synthetic route to be able to make that molecule. And so lots to look at there. Okay. Let's skip over the course content for now. Let's talk about assessment. Each and every one of you are taking organic chemistry because you have some professional goal in mind. At this level in your education, a grade should reflect your knowledge and command of the subject, not the effort with which you pursue it. With that in mind, your grade will be based on your knowledge and command of the subject as demonstrated through problem-solving exercises, cooperatives, quizzes, exams, and cumulative final. All that means is I don't give scores for attendance, and I don't give scores for the practice work that you should be putting into this that is going to demonstrate the knowledge. So in other words, you know, when you're going through and you're practicing and doing homework, that homework is something that at this level, you just need to understand that you need to do to get the skill set. And so therefore there are not just points that are awarded for completing an assignment. The points are awarded based on how well you did on that assignment. And that's not to say that it is impossible to be able to get a good grade in the class. Many, many, students earn A's within organic chemistry and come out of here with very high percentages at the end of the class. Part of that is due to my grading, which I still need to explain to you. And part of that is trusting me in the grading, but that takes time to develop. So we'll get there. All right, homework. All of the in-chapter exercises and end-of-chapter exercises are viewed as essential study guides, which will allow you to practice the requisite skills. The answers to those homework problems are in the solutions manual, and it is therefore pointless for me to grade homework assignments. Thus, homework will not be collected. In addition, individual homework assignments will not be handed out. All of the problems in the back of the book are viewed as valuable. And as I said, the OChem is a second language, your textbook, and if you go through all of those problems and you need more, ask me for more and I will create more. In some cases I do. In some cases I do have some study materials that I have already put together that I hand out and say, work on these as well. Here's another set that I want you to do. All trying to give you the right practice to be able to get you the skill sets that you need when you are face-to-face with a quiz or an exam. Okay. And at this level too, this is one of the things that many of the other instructors that are at Cabrillo don't understand. We oftentimes have these activities for faculty members, faculty development activities. And everybody's talking about, how do you get your students to do homework? How do you grade their homework? What do you do with all these things? I said, I don't even assign homework. They said, how do your students learn? I said, they go and they do all the problems. And they say, well, how do you get them to do the problems? And I say, I don't. I say, you need to do the problems, and they do the problems. It is just a fact of organic chemistry that by the time you get here, the organic chemistry students are just ready to transfer and go on to a four-year university. You guys have learned all of the study skills. You know how it is that you learn individually. You know what you need to do in order to be successful within a class. I don't need to tell you how to do that anymore. So all I need to do is point the direction to where the materials are and turn you guys loose and let you go at it. And it has been extraordinarily successful throughout the years. And I think it's a critical, important learning step to becoming an independent learner, which is the goal that we want for all of you anyway, and what you'll be doing once you get to a four-year university. So there's my soapbox pitch there. Okay, cooperatives. That's not to say that I don't create any assignments. Cooperatives are my term for group exercises. These are exercises that it is difficult for one person to successfully tackle on their own. They are complicated problems. They are multidimensional, multifaceted problems. They require looking at the problem from a number of different directions, and they benefit greatly from discussion and contribution from many different people. So a cooperative is meant to be worked on cooperatively. These I do grade, and these I do collect and throw points for. It's not a lot of points, but it's enough that I want you to really focus on the cooperatives, and because these cooperatives are most like a lot of the types of questions that I ask in the exams and things. So this gives you a good foundation to know what's coming. So the purpose of the co-ops is to encourage study groups. Co-ops will be distributed via the course website. I'll show you where they are. I'll also link them in the Canvas shell. They'll be all over the place. Each co-op will count for, I have 3 points in there, but it should be, I guess that is what I'm doing, 3 points, or about 3% of your grade overall for the number of co-ops that we have. Quizzes, I need to change the time constraints in here because this is a online class and these time constraints don't apply, but quizzes will be, we have a quiz for just about every chapter. Just about every week, we'll probably have a quiz. And while when the class is face-to-face, I usually do 10 to 15 minutes and usually up to 4 problems, I've taken those and I do the exact same quizzes. I just open up the time frame. So you generally have like a weekend to complete the quizzes once they open up. So that's not that strict time frame that you see there. Exams, there'll be a total of 2 100-point exams a semester. The date and content of each exam is detailed in the schedule. And what we're going to do is when it's time for an exam, I'll put out an email or I'll put it in the Canvas shell, however it is that we do it, that the exam is now live. Its due date is a week from now. And And what we will continue to do is continue to have lecture and go on with lecture. So we don't have a lecture period that we devote strictly to you guys just doing the exam. We'll just continue the lecture. The lecture will keep going and the exam will be up and open and available for you to work on. And then there's also a cumulative final. And that final is scored out of 150 points. So, and that's 27% of the grade. So you can see the breakdown here. We've got six co-ops. We've got roughly 10 quizzes. Usually, I think I have 11 quizzes and I drop the lowest one out of your score. So that's not explained in the document here, but I do tend to drop the lowest quiz score. There are two 100-point exams and there's a 150-point final. Total number of points, 568. There is no weight on them. They are all equal points and straight up percentages. My grade for the class usually runs, the quizzes won't be 10 to 15 minutes long. They're open over a whole weekend. So I usually give you something like 4 days, maybe even 5 days to complete a quiz. So they're not 10 to 15 minutes long. Let's see, where was I? Oh, grades. 100 to 90 is an A. 80 to 90 is a B. 70 to 80 is 70 to 79.5 is my cutoff where I do those, is a C. And so it's a straight grading scale. Okay. Access. Many of you may not know what access is. And some of you may have had in Chem 1A or Chem 1B had an Access SI leader. Access is a program that comes from UCSC. It's an NIH Bridges program, which its goal is to get racially minoritized students and students from backgrounds that traditionally are underrepresented in the sciences to be transferring to UCSC and to complete their bachelor's of science degrees. That's the purpose of Access. In order to meet that purpose, Access provides resources to Cabrillo to fund peer tutoring. And the peer tutor is usually somebody who sits in on the class. And I don't see Chloe in here. I need to make sure that Chloe's getting these emails as well so that she knows where the links are. Chloe is a student that I had last semester who did extraordinarily well in Chem 12. And Chloe is going to be our SI leader. She's going to work to figure out a time frame when to offer SI sessions. She may offer them virtually. She may offer them live in person once we go back in session after February 22nd. So I'll have to work with Chloe and figure out what that's going to look like. But Chloe and I are in the process of figuring that, all that out. And as far as the value of going to an SI session or a study session with a peer tutor like this, usually I work very closely with my SI leaders, much more so than most other faculty. And I'm oftentimes feeding the SI leader, or Chloe in this case, work problems, studies or study sets for you guys to be able to work on that I think are really good problem sets to use. Those get handed out to the entire class afterwards. So they make their debut in the SI sessions. And then as soon as that SI session is over and Chloe's gone through and presented all that work and used them, anybody who wasn't able to make it to that session, I make sure that that work also gets out to them so that everybody is getting the same resources there. So that's the access component. In a virtual classroom, none of these things really make sense anymore. These are really for in-person. The issue of cell phones when you're in a live class, attendance, I don't take attendance. I've never taken attendance. That's my policy, is always show up if you want to learn. Grade disputes, best place is office hours to talk to me about something that you feel that I may have graded incorrectly. Oftentimes, you know, when we're in a face-to-face class and you hand back quizzes and a student sees that they got a score that was added up wrong, or a student sees that they have something written on their page that the instructor may not have seen, there is oftentimes a great urgency on the student's part to bring it to the attention of the instructor so that the impression there is that the instructor doesn't think that the student changed it as soon as it was handed back. I never consider that That is not the first thing that goes through my mind. So the best thing to do, because the beginning of class is oftentimes very challenging, is to hit me up in office hours and let me take a look at it. I do make mistakes from time to time, and I'm more than happy to correct them and make sure that you get the points that you should be getting. Okay. Cheating is not generally an issue. Most other faculty get really bent out of shape when they spend an enormous amount of time on an online exercise, and that online exercise shows up in Chegg. So Chegg being one of the main culprits. I think there's a few others out there too, but it's hard for an instructor when they spend an enormous amount of time, hours and hours, putting together a resource, putting together a test material, and then that test material shows up on Chegg and just nullifies all those hours that they put into it. And sometimes it shows up on Chegg within minutes of putting the assignment up online. It's heartbreaking. I tend to rewrite most of my exercises, and so that's not as big a concern for me. However, I too would regret having things show up on Chegg. They really don't need to be there. So, and I think in the format that I have structured the class, it's really not necessary. I'm encouraging you to work together in the first place. I'm encouraging you to share resources. I'm encouraging you to seek out help from your classmates as you work on these activities. And so that should alleviate a lot of the need to be able to go to something like Chegg in order to do that. And by the way, going to Chegg doesn't help you learn the material. It helps you get a score, but it doesn't help you as you go on, and things just get harder as you go on. And so the foundational knowledge that I'm trying to give you is trying to support you through the rest of your academic goals. And you're just doing an end run around that if you're going that direction. Disruptions, I'm going to skip over. I think this expectations of your instructor sums up what I try to get across most. You can expect that I will fully answer your questions regarding course content or grading when such questions are asked at the appropriate time. You can expect that your work in the course will be evaluated fairly without bias and will be returned in a timely manner. You can expect that I will start and end class on time. You can expect to be treated with respect at all times. You can expect that I will provide you with a challenging and engaging semester, which will prepare you for whatever future goals you have that have led you to take my course. All right, so that's my promise to you there. And then the non-discrimination and accessibility notice, I know I read this, it's the same as what I read in lab, but I want to read it for those people who are not in lab. The land on which we gather is the unceded territory of the Awaswa-speaking Upi tribe. Today, there are no known survivors of the Awaswas nation. The Amamutsin tribal band, comprised of the descendants of indigenous people taken to Mission Santa Cruz and San Juan Bautista during Spanish colonialization of the Central Coast, is today working hard to restore traditional stewardship practices on these lands to honor the Awaswas and heal from historical trauma. The district is committed to equal opportunity in educational programs, employment, and all access to institutional programs and activities. The district and each individual who represents the district, aka me, shall provide access to its services, classes, and programs without regard to national origin, religion, age, gender, gender identity, gender expression, race or ethnicity, color, medical condition, genetic information, ancestry, sexual orientation, marital status, physical or mental disability, pregnancy, or military and veteran status, or because he, she, they is perceived to have one or more of the foregoing characteristics, or based on association with a person or group with one or more of these actual or perceived characteristics. I encourage students with disabilities to explain their needs and appropriate accommodations as evidenced by a counselor or specialist recommendations to me during office hours. As required by the Americans with Disability Act, accommodations are provided to ensure equal opportunity for students with verified disabilities. To determine if you qualify or if you need assistance with an accommodation, please contact the Accessibility Support Center, and I have that at room 1073 upstairs in the library, and there are two different phone numbers there to contact. Usually now, the Accessibility Support Center emails out at the beginning of the semester any students emails the instructors on behalf of students that have accommodations. However, if you happen to have accommodations, I encourage you to sit down with me in one of my office hours and explain to me what your needs are and how best I can help you. All right. It's important to me that I'm meeting the needs of all of my students, and that understanding what your learning differences are helps me to be a better instructor. So that's my pitch there. All right, schedule. Fairly aggressive schedule. We start off with an introduction in chapter one. We'll talk about electrons, bonds, and molecular properties today. We do basically a chapter a week, pretty much. You can see where I have the quizzes in here. These quizzes are not happening at the same time as lecture. They are not an in-lecture quiz. They will open up on the Canvas shell and just be available for you, but that's when they become available. And I'll just go through and be clicking through the information. Now, this is my ideal schedule. What happens in the middle of a semester happens in the middle of a semester, and sometimes the schedule gets off. So normally what I do is I try to hold the quizzes and the exams in the locations where I have set them. If the content is not where I want, oftentimes I adjust the content on the exam, trying to hold the exam so I'm not moving exams all over the place. Sometimes certain subject matters are best kept cohesive on an exam. And so once in a while, I move an exam. Usually that's second semester, not first semester. So you can see that there are, because we have the Tuesday-Thursday schedule, there are no holidays in this semester. We do have the spring break at week 9. So we have our 1 week spring break from March 22nd, March 24th. No meetings that week. In fact, you won't even be able to get a hold of me because I will be out in the British Virgin Islands, far away from any ability to be able to get to a cell phone or email or anything. So I will be completely out of contact for that week. And then we go all the way through chapter 14, ethers and epoxides. And then we end with a cumulative final. It's asynchronous. So again, there is no final time. That final will just be opened up for finals week. And you will have that week to be able to go through and complete that cumulative final. Okay.
Quick question.
Yep.
In Chem 1B, we went over a lot of the nomenclature of like alkenes, that sort of thing. Is there going to be a section on nomenclature for this class?
There is, but it's not a section that is it's not a cohesive section on all nomenclature. Basically, what we do is we look at the nomenclature as we go forward. So when we get into chapter 8 with alkenes, one of the first things that we will talk about is the nomenclature of alkenes. When we get into chapter 9 or chapter 10 and we're doing alkynes, we'll do nomenclature on alkynes. So we do the nomenclature step by step as we go through, rather than learning all of the nomenclature at once. The nomenclature that you did in Chem 1B was good, but it was very rudimentary, very basic. So what we'll do is when we start off the nomenclature and we start off in the alkanes somewhere in chapter 4, and we start looking at nomenclature within chapter 4, what we'll do is we'll break out the basic rules of all nomenclature and how all organic molecules are done. It's the foundation for the nomenclature. And then what we do is we basically add in each functional group as we reach that functional group. And mainly what I'll do is the nomenclature is systematic, meaning that there is a system and that there are no exceptions to that system. So because the nomenclature is systematic, the first time we engage with it, I'll spend a lot of time lecturing on it and looking at that system. But then as we introduce each new functional group, it becomes your responsibility. And I remind you, and I remind all the students that it becomes your responsibility to make sure that you're solid on that nomenclature. I don't spend a lot of time on nomenclature in each chapter. It's important that you do, that you know how to name those molecules, because I'll be throwing out names and testing nomenclature. On every test, I'll have a nomenclature component, but I won't go through it after that first chapter as rigorously as I did in the first time. Okay?
I have a question. My name is Anna. I'm new to Cambrio. So I wanted to ask about Canvas. I tried logging in and I didn't see anything from there. So I just wanted to, I saw your emails. I just wanted to make sure, like, when should we be expecting Canvas to be open?
Yeah, Anna, it should have been open weeks ago. Most faculty get their Canvas shells up and running and have it open, you know, 2 weeks before the class starts. I'm just not organized in that way. So I'm working diligently to get the Canvas shell changed. The part of the problem is that I have never had a Canvas shell for Chem 12A. So prior to COVID, I was an avoider of Canvas like the plague. I hated Canvas. Canvas and I now are sort of frenemies. I like to code in HTML and I love web page coding. I actually do a lot of coding in different languages. And Canvas, I could never do what I wanted to do because you're limited to what Canvas will allow you to do. And I get frustrated with Canvas. So I never used it. And when we went into COVID, I taught Chem 12B and another instructor taught Chem 12A. And because it was so much work to get the Canvas shells up and running, we just stuck in our own wheelhouse in Chem 12A and Chem 12B. And I haven't taught this class since COVID started, which means I have no Canvas shell for it. So I'm kind of starting from scratch. I'm going to do my best to try to get that thing up and running later on today, but it's going to be a little bare bones. It'll be a build it as we go kind of thing. It'll have all of the informational pages that you will need, but it may not have all of those, definitely will not have all the modules fleshed in. I'll be fleshing them in as we go forward, trying to stay one step ahead of you. So you're not missing anything. It's all on me. And welcome to Cabrillo.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's just last semester I was taking OChem 1 and I had a surgery in my knee. So I unfortunately failed the class because I just couldn't attend class in person in my school. So that's why I came to you guys. So, but okay, sounds good. So all the quiz, like the first, for example, for quiz 1, it should be up soon. And the notes.
Usually what I do is the quizzes won't be visible until I open them up. But let me also share another screen. I want to go back here for a second. At the beginning of my syllabus, I had this ChemEd.study Chem 12A webpage. So let me go to this webpage real quick and show you what's going on with that, because this has always been my answer to Canvas, is my own sort of management with my own webpages. And so there's a lot of information that is up there that you can see right now that may be helpful to you and knowing where the lectures are going to be and whatnot. So let me stop that share. I apologize, my dogs. It sounds like my wife is coming home, and that is a standard routine for my dogs when somebody comes in the door. Let's see, I need a new window here. And then I'm going to move that over and share that window. And then I will take you to chemed.study. And this is my personal web pages. So here, what you have is my contact information, my office hours, what classes I'm teaching. Each one of these is a link that takes you to that course, what I'm scheduled to teach next semester, links again that take you to that course. And then I also have course pages links over here for various courses. Even though I may not be teaching them, I still keep my links open and live. So if you go to the Chem 12AL page, what you find is that you find the syllabus here in PDF and in HTML format. That gives people who are using screen readers, my dogs are so loud, that gives people the ability to use screen readers and things to make it accessible. So let me hit the syllabus here. You can see it's the exact same document that I've just been presenting, just in HTML format. It's been updated now. So all of these now are updated for this semester and are accurate. The schedule, I've also got input, and it's accurate for this semester now. The cooperatives are all here and online. They are accessible in HTML and in PDF. There are additional...
I'm so sorry. So with that, we just turned them in on Canvas, right?
They will. So I'm going to create a module just like you would for any other course in Canvas. And in that module, there will be assignments for each module. There will be a date that the assignment is available, and then there will be a date that the assignment is due by.
Okay, sounds
good. It'll all be controlled through Canvas.
Okay, cool.
Okay. The additional resources that I have here, I have Nomenclature of Organic Chemistry. This is the actual IUPAC website and what is called the compilation, the Blue Book of Organic Chemistry Nomenclature. This is all things nomenclature. If you want to name any organic molecule, these are the rules to name any organic molecule. Nucleophilic Substitution Elimination Guidelines. These are some topics that I find that can be helpful to have some supplemental information. So this is a guideline that I have written for dealing with one of the most difficult subjects within all of organic chemistry. Web Spectra is an NMR practice site. Usually we use this during second semester. Organic Structure Elucidation. This is more NMR practice, and then Introductory to Mass Spectrometry. So these things here are some resources that I use second semester, but I keep them included in those additional resources. As well, I have some protected resources here for people who are working to get the Klein textbook. I have chapter one and chapter two of Klein online for you here so that you have access to those chapters while you may be working to get some of these resources. The solutions manual, chapters one and two combined for Klein, are there for you as well. And I have the first couple of experiments in Pavia that are here. So this is my answer to people when most of the time, a lot of students come in and they have not secured textbooks because they're afraid the textbooks may change from what is listed in a bookstore, or they may be looking for alternative ways to get those textbooks as opposed to the bookstore and the expense that the bookstore offers. So while people are struggling to try to get their textbooks resolved, I like to provide those first initial resources there. So there you go. And then I have all of the archived lectures from last semester. So the last semester that I taught, which this doesn't have the beginning lectures because we went into COVID around March. So I kept these archived from 2020, and these are the lectures from 2020. And that allows you that if you want to preview a subject matter or whatever, those lectures are still online. The new Zoom recordings that we do each week will go here. And so there's nothing here yet because this is our first lecture. And as soon as it's done, I'll encode it and I'll get it uploaded online. And then I send out an email to everybody in the class saying that the lecture has been uploaded, and I give you the direct link to it. And then the second thing that I do is I go into Canvas and I link it within the module in the Canvas shell, so it's accessible from the Canvas shell as well. So lots of different ways to be able to access the information. And you can see, if I go over to the lab that we had yesterday, you can see that I put that first Zoom recording up online there from lab yesterday. Yeah, so that's the website. Hopefully that can help a little bit while I get the Canvas shell up and running, but that's where everything's gonna be located, okay? Any questions come up while I'm going through that?
No, thank you so much for explaining that.
You're welcome. How about anybody else? Just checking in. Okay. With that, let me stop that screen share. Wanted to look and see the chat. I couldn't see the chat there while I was doing that. I think that hits everything in terms of introduction. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I need to do. Quick time check, see where we're at. I guess the last thing that I would tell you is that for those people who were not in lab, who don't have lab, who are only taking the lecture, my PhD is in synthetic organic chemistry. And many times when you take organic chemistry, the instructor that you are taking organic chemistry from is not an organic chemist. They're oftentimes a general chemist who has been pushed into taking or teaching organic chemistry once in a while. So most of the time, organic chemists are a little bit more rare than the rest of chemistry. That is true of both myself and Zaruba Levi, the other instructor who teaches organic chemistry. And I love teaching this class. It has been my joy to teach this for nearly 20 years. I love teaching the Chem 12A. I love teaching the Chem 12B. And I love teaching this student population in particular. I don't think I realized when I first started teaching this class how rare this class is in terms of a teaching experience. Most instructors struggle to get students to do what they're supposed to do. They struggle with difficulties within the classroom where students are not paying attention or being disruptive in different ways. And organic chemistry is just a different beast. It is such a joy to teach that, I love teaching this class. So I'm really looking forward to starting Chem 12A again and getting a chance to go through this beginning material again with students, as opposed to just doing 12B all the time. The other thing that I love is the continuity, taking a student from 12A and having them again in 12B, so that when we come back the next semester, we just launch right back into work. And there's not this whole big getting to know new people and new systems and new ways. It's just continuity of the class, and the class just keeps going through the new material. So that's just a fun thing to do. Okay, that is all of my introductory information. The only other thing that I would say here is that I value your questions, and that it is the dynamic of lecture and your questions that make this thing work. So at any time, feel free to interrupt. You can raise your hand. I'll try to keep an eye on the screen if I can see it. I try to watch the chat for questions as they're coming through there. If you want to just unmute your microphone and say, "Hey, Jason, excuse me," and I'll grab your question quick. And I guess the other thing that I'll say here too is that a right answer and a wrong answer to a question when I'm throwing out questions are equally important, and that I don't look at a wrong answer as saying somebody is not paying attention. In fact, I oftentimes bait you to answer a question incorrectly so that I can then modify that understanding and change it to what it needs to be. And so I will bait you for wrong answers all the time. And I celebrate those wrong answers as much as I celebrate a right answer, because the wrong answer was given because you were paying attention. I just baited you to give me the wrong answer. And so participate, be an active participant, throw that answer out, whether it's right or wrong. Don't get that tied up internal feeling of, oh, am I going to answer this right? Or am I going to answer this wrong? And do I want to put myself out there and be that person to put myself out there? Doesn't matter. Put yourself out there, because the wrong answers are just as important as the right ones. All right. That's another little thing to say there. I celebrate all the answers. Okay. Change my brain from what we're doing to presentation mode. So let me make some adjustments. Another thing about my presentation style is that I don't use PowerPoint. I hate PowerPoint. PowerPoint has its uses. I shouldn't say that I hate it. PowerPoint has its uses. It just is not the best tool for lecturing. Having slides that are all completed and done doesn't allow you for a great amount of flexibility in teaching. And so it's important to be able to adjust on the fly as you need to. And so usually it's me and a whiteboard when I'm in class and it's face-to-face, or me and a whiteboard when I'm online. I do it the same way. My favorite application is Notability. So this is what I'm using right now, is the app Notability. And I tried a lot of different note-taking software when we went into COVID. And I tried almost everything that was out there. I bought all the apps. I paid for them just because I needed to try them all out and figure out what was going to work. Notability is by far the best app out there for taking notes. It allows you the most flexibility and the easiest time changing colors for doing that, for shading if you want to do it, for resizing things, for copying and pasting, moving things around. Notability is by far the best app that I have found. And all of the notes that I take in Notability, I take and I put up online as well. So, if you are going to watch a video after the video has been posted and you would like to download the notes and to add notes to it while you're watching the video, I think that has some great value to it. I put all those notes up on as a PDF up online when I post everything. So the notes always go up online as well. All right, so organic chemistry. We start off with a look at, I want to start off with, I think, bonding patterns. Organic chemistry, I should say, differences between general chemistry and organic chemistry. Oh, Clarissa, you got a question. Sorry.
Okay, I know you repeated, I know you mentioned about that about the notes, how you'll upload them, right? So it will be accessible for us to print them out as an option. Is that correct?
Yeah, if you can print out a PDF, yeah. Absolutely. The notes won't be there ahead of time. They only go up once the lecture is done and because the notes go along with the lecture, they're created at the time of the lecture. So yes, but they will all be online in PDF format available for you to print out.
Okay, great. Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay. So in chapter one is fairly small. What we need to do in chapter one is we need to understand the differences between general chemistry and organic chemistry. So maybe that's where I should start a little bit, and is explaining some of these differences. You have been studying, God, I haven't done this in 2 years. This is actually kind of exciting, and I need to rethink all these things that I usually do. You've been studying now Chem 1A, Chem 1B, maybe even starting in Chem 3. So some of you have taken a year of chemistry. Some of you have taken a year and 4 or 5 months of chemistry. In that entire time, you have studied the 118 elements on the periodic table in general. You have looked at acid base. You have looked at solubility. You have looked at sometimes nuclear chemistry, double displacement reactions, redox reactions. You've looked at all of these different things for all of the elements on the periodic table. We're going to focus on just a few of them. We're going to focus on hydrogen. We're going to focus on carbon, nitrogen, oxygen. We're going to look a little bit at fluorine. Into this also comes the halogens that we pick up a little bit. So we've got fluorine, we've got chlorine, we've got bromine. Iodine comes in a little bit. We'll deal with phosphorus and sulfur. And some of the metals come into play, but by and large, this is the main part of organic chemistry. And it really is carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, and hydrogen. And these are the main elements that we're going to focus on for a year. And it's amazing that we could go from 118 elements down to focusing on just these guys, and that these guys could be that important and that critical. So what is it about these elements that are so different than all of the other elements? And what it is it's carbon. It's carbon's ability to be able to form stable covalent bonds and to be able to make very long chains. Carbon is the only element that we have that can make these long carbon-carbon chains. And in making these chains, it allows carbon to make molecules of great variability. In fact, there's an infinite number of molecules that we could make, and we could never run out of different molecules that we could possibly make, which means that we could never study every molecule because there's not a finite permutation of molecules that can be made. The only other element that gets close to this is silicon. And so while we don't study silicon really in the purview of organic chemistry formally, silicon can make silicon-silicon bonds. But silicon, being much larger than carbon, has a much weaker bond. And so silicon can make these silicon-silicon bonds up to four or five silicon atoms, but then they fall apart fairly readily. And so it doesn't have the great flexibility that carbon does in order to be able to make molecules. I mean, this chain, these chains that we can make can go on for a long time and can be branched. And the polymers that we can create with carbon can go hundreds of thousands in terms of the length of the chain. And so when you start to think about all of the different ways that you can connect the carbons in that chain in branching, and then you combine them with other elements, the minute that we start to take and combine nitrogen into a carbon chain and the number of carbons that can connect to it, or oxygen into that chain, we get great flexibility, and we can put oxygen and nitrogen in a molecule together with carbon, right? And then of course, then hydrogen that fits in with these molecules. And so the types of things that we're going to be looking at and studying within organic chemistry are these long organic molecules. And this becomes the molecule that that life is based on. Or I should say not the molecule that life is based on, but the elements that life is based on, because of the complexity that can be encoded in these molecules, in these organic molecules, that other elements simply cannot do. So when we studied the other elements in these Gen Chem classes, Chem 1A, Chem 1B, most of what we were looking at was primarily reactions of either ions or polyatomic ions, or elements. And so you were limited to these polyatomic ions or polyatomic ions. You were limited to those guys. And we really didn't study. In Chem 1B, you got into some organic molecules a little bit. And you got into some ethanol, methanol. You did a little bit of ester work. There was a few organic molecules that you picked on, but not a lot. So that's the main difference as we start to look at just these elements. And we'll spend a year looking at carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, and hydrogen, a little bit of the halogens, a little bit of phosphorus and sulfur, and we throw in some organometallics in there too. Some of the other metals that become important become sodium, lithium becomes important, iron becomes important, manganese becomes important, as does a few other platinum, palladium, osmium, a few of the alkaline metals, alkaline earth metals, and transition metals become important that we study too. I should throw magnesium in here too. Magnesium being one of the really important ones with Grignard reagents. But we'll go through an organometallic section too, where we look at many of the metals and how they come into it, how they come into play in organic synthesis, okay? But to start off, what we need to do is we need to understand, perhaps in a greater detail than you did when you went through Chem 1A and Chem 1B, how molecules bind. We go back to VSEPR theory and Lewis bonding theory, and that's where I like to start a little bit. So, Lewis bonding. VSEPR theory is really about three-dimensional, but the Lewis bonding patterns and common bonding patterns is an important place to start. So in these common bonding patterns, what I think about is I think about the group numbers. So when we look at group 1A, versus 2A, 3A. We go out to 4, 5, 6, and 7. We don't really go out to 8, but you remember these group numbers, and what these group numbers mean are the number of valence electrons that each of the elements in these groups have. So in group 2A, they have 2 valence electrons. In group 3A, they have 3 valence electrons. In group 4A, you've got 4. In 5A, we've got 5. In 6A, our 6, and 7A, finally our 7 valence electrons. Now notice that I'm putting 2 electrons on each side of my representation of a general element. The elements that become important in these, boron, and boron with its 3 valence electrons, likes to make 3 bonds. And in making 3 bonds, the way that we think about that is that every time boron picks up a bond, it picks up an additional electron. And so the bond is comprised of 2 electrons, one brought by the boron and one picked up from the element that it is bonding to. So boron likes to make 3 bonds, and it can make those 3 bonds in a number of different configurations. When boron bonds in this way, I usually don't start with boron. When boron bonds in this way, one of the things that boron has got going on with these 3 valence electrons is that usually we're governed by the octet rule. We're looking for 2, 4, 6, we're looking for 8 electrons. And boron being small and electron deficient violates the octet rule in that it only has 6 valence electrons. And in fact, in order to pick up that 8 valence electron, boron gets a formal negative charge when it does so. And we can go to formal charges and the rules on formal charges and how we calculate formal charge for an element. We'll do that in a minute. But let's look at carbon. So carbon, being element in 4A, has 4 valence electrons. And as such, with those 4 valence electrons, carbon needs to pick up 4 more electrons in order to get to an octet. To pick up those 4 more electrons, carbon is going to attempt to make 4 bonds. Those 4 bonds then give it 8 valence electrons. They give it an octet. And that octet is important in that it means that all of the s and p orbitals are full. Bringing all these pictures together, if I take a carbon and I look at the s orbitals and the p orbitals and the number of electrons that can fit into those orbitals when full, or what I should say is, I should look at carbon as being, let's do it this way. I'll do it all out. This would be 1s2, this is 2s2, this is 2p, and my valence electrons here are only 4, so I would be 2p2. So this would be, carbon would have the electron configuration 1s2, 2s2, 2p2. There is your 4 valence electrons that are in the system. Those 4 valence electrons are the electrons that we're showing as the 4 dots that are around the system. So what carbon does then is carbon picks up an additional 4 more electrons in order to get to an octet. And as soon as carbon is filled out with that, if I put 2 electrons into an S and then the 6 electrons into a P, then when I look at adding those together, those come up with 8 electrons, and that's our octet rule. And that makes the carbon isoelectronic with its closest noble gas. So that's what's governing all this. And so carbon tries to make 4 bonds in order to meet its octet rule. Those four bonds can be made in a number of different configurations. Carbon can have a double bond and two singles. Carbon can have a double bond and another double bond. Carbon can have a triple bond and a single bond. And all of these are viable bonding patterns that carbon can take on, in which carbon has four bonds and has an octet. Those four bonding patterns are all common patterns that we see within organic chemistry. If we take nitrogen and look at nitrogen, nitrogen starts off with five valence electrons. In order to meet nitrogen's octet, nitrogen needs to pick up three additional electrons, meaning that it needs to make three additional bonds. Those three bonds can occur in a number of different ways. Nitrogen can make a double and a single with a lone pair, or nitrogen can make a triple bond and a lone pair. And those are the three most common bonding patterns for nitrogen. Last one that I'll do, and then we're out of time, is oxygen. Oxygen, having six valence electrons, needs to pick up two more in order to make its octet. Having only two bonds, oxygen has only two bonding patterns. It can have a double bond and two lone pairs, or it can have two singles and the two lone pairs. And those are all the patterns available to oxygen. Now, these patterns can be arranged in an interesting way. We can take them and we can align them such that we can look at the patterns where nitrogen has three bonds, lining it up with the other element that has three bonds. Oxygen only has two, lining it up with things that bond to two. We can take boron and we can align the boron such that boron is binding to three and two. And of course, this guy comes up here where it binds to four. And then we can look at and arrange them in the number of atoms bound to. So this is bound to four, to three. These are bonding patterns here to two and to one. And the only other thing that I gotta do here is I gotta take this guy and slide him up here, because these two are two different ways that carbon can both bond to two different elements. And that these guys bonding to one, slide down here a little bit. So there's a reorganization of it in terms of the number of atoms that each of those elements bind to. But these are the common bonding patterns and where they come from. And they come from the octet rule. And starting from these bonding patterns, we'll take a look at how these elements actually make these bonds. What is the theory behind how they bond? And what consequences does that model have for the geometry of these things once they are bonded? That's where we'll go on Thursday, all right? So that's just a little introduction into the organic chemistry, a little bit of review of things that you guys should be bringing in from Chem 1A, Chem 1B, and from there we'll pick it up, and we've got a long road ahead of us, but very, very fun, very cool material to work through it. All right. So I'm going to cut it here. It's 12:36. I'll stay on and answer any questions you may have. Other than that, I'll get this thing up posted online and I'll get an email out to everyone. And I may do a little survey to see if there isn't a better time frame to offer the live sessions in order to incorporate more people. We had a pretty good following, you guys. Thank you for your attention, and thank you for showing up. And we'll keep things status quo until I get a survey out and see if anything else makes sense. But for now, this is where everything's going to be. All right. Thank you, guys. Take care. And like I said, I'll stay online and answer any questions.
Have a good one. Thank you.
You're welcome. Take care.
Bye.